The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Women's Football Podcast. Blimey, I've been doing this for 23 episodes. No hangover, no jet lag for me on this occasion, thankfully. And I am delighted to welcome my guest presenter. She's been on the show before, and since I had her on, she's kayaked to the Amazon and she's trekked to the South Pole. Ish Ferguson. All right, Ish?
Yeah, I'm all right. If only those things were true, I'd have so much more respect.
Well, I promised you the last time you were on that I would give you a better introduction than last time, because you were disappointed with just former Australian international. So we'll throw in firewalking and climbing Kilimanjaro and things like that. You've done it all, haven't you? Done it all.
So close, yeah. I think the most recent claim to fame was, I think there's a YouTube clip on that says the worst women's football tackle ever. Yeah, so that's the recent one. But the firewalking sounds much better.
Yeah, firewalking's cool. I've done that before. So Ish and me are going to have a chat about a few things that have been going on. Obviously, I haven't done a full show for a little while. The last one was obviously our special from Seattle. So on this occasion, we're going to have a chat about the UEFA Women's Champions League final. What a game that was, with Wolfsburg claiming their second UEFA Women's Champions League title. We're going to have a look at the first half of the Women's Super League in England. Obviously, they are on a break now. And to finish that off, we'll talk about the FA Cup final, which took place this past weekend. We're going to have a very brief look at the German Bundesliga. It has come down to a final day shootout between Frankfurt and Wolfsburg. So we'll assess both teams' chances of claiming the Bundesliga. We'll have a look at the NWSL and see what's going on there, with Seattle Reign still leading the way. I've got a couple of interviews as well that I will introduce across the course of the episode, and anything else I've forgotten in this introduction we will cover as we go along. So let's get going.
The Women's Football Podcast would like to thank our partners. Want more women's football? Subscribe to She Kicks magazine at shekicks.net. And the Women's Football Podcast is part of the Soccer Desk Network.
thesoccerdesk.com.
Okay, so after that long rambled introduction with Ish, we'll cover the first topic on the show, and that was, of course, the UEFA Women's Champions League, which took place in the last couple of weeks. A fantastic final that took place in Lisbon in Portugal, with Wolfsburg coming out 4-3 winners. Ish, you watched the highlights. Unfortunately, you didn't manage to see the game live, but from what you saw, what did you make of it? I mean, a fantastic advert for women's football, wasn't it?
Well, I can tell you this. I was at the Champions League final last year between Lyon and Wolfsburg at Stamford Bridge, and it looked a hell of a lot more entertaining than that game was. I mean, what an exceptional game. Tereso, who, you know, arguably have one of the best players in the world, in Marta, who just continues to perform year after year and scored a cracking goal and was obviously influential. But Wolfsburg, all credit to them, you know, coming back. I think Tereso would be disappointed to concede those two soft goals, I would say. But I think that's a very German mentality of continue on, do the hard yards, and I think they were obviously successful and deserved it.
To come back from 2-0 down in any game, but to do it in a Champions League final, and then to not to come back once, but to come back twice, because obviously came from 3-2 down as well. I mean, whatever game you're playing in, that shows great character and mentality, doesn't it?
I think the key was coming back from 2-0 down to begin with, because it's that scary scoreline we all know as players. You get one goal. It's so funny how the momentum can change so quickly. So knowing that they could come back from two goals down, I don't think it bothered them when Tereso went another goal up, because honestly, your positive mentality and your belief that you can come back and you will get a goal if you continue doing all the right things and put in the effort and the application, you know, is a credit to them.
Obviously, it was almost like a last chance saloon for Tereso, wasn't it? They're obviously going to lose a lot of players. Vida Bikete has gone off to Portland. Marta has left the club. The American trio have all gone over to the NWSL. We don't really know what's going to happen with them now, but I guess that's credit to Wolfsburg, because knowing that they were coming up against something like that makes the job even harder, doesn't it? Knowing that Tereso, as I said, it's almost their last chance to claim a Champions League title.
Yeah, and it's a shame that that is the case. But also, if you look at the support structure around these women's football teams, Wolfsburg and the German Frauen Bundesliga is a great example of a sustainable league. And while Tereso have had some great players in, and we know that they've had financial troubles, maybe it's not about buying the team. You know, we see it in the men's game, but I think we'd all much prefer to see more sustainable structures. We've seen it fall down in the US. They're getting it right the third time round. And I think a club like Tereso should definitely take a lot from this experience.
As I said, we don't really know what's going to happen with them, because there are a few tweets that have been floating around over the last week saying that they're not actually going to be demoted to the second tier of Swedish football. So no idea what's going to happen with them. But looking at Wolfsburg, second Champions League title in a row. Along the way, they knocked out Malmo, who are obviously now Rosengard. They knocked out Potsdam in the semi-finals. I mean, comparing them to some of the European giants of recent years, Lyon being one, Potsdam being another, where do you rank this team amongst the elite of the last few years?
I think generally, in the last few years, I do think these German teams have, how would I explain it? I don't think they've been given the respect that they deserve, because they've started to fly under the radar. They don't have, you know, the martyrs and the flashy players, but consistently, year in, year out, they perform not just in their domestic league, but then on the international stage. And I think that then has a knock-on effect to the German national team. And I don't think we give them enough credit for that. I think there's other leagues that we all take more notice of, and I'm not sure why. But as far as Wolfsburg is concerned, from last year, and they had their backs against the wall against Lyon last year, they had no right to win that game. But I tell you what, I give them all credit for coming out winners on the day, because that's what football is about. It's not always about the pretty, spectacular, total football. It's about winning games.
Now, I had Kelly Smith on the show a few months ago, and in no way did she suggest that the German teams are at an advantage as such. But we know that the German league and the French league has a different... the season runs differently to the WSL and the Damallsvenskan. Obviously, they are summer leagues. The German league, the French league and others run from the traditional September through to May. Therefore, is there an argument that could suggest the German teams are better prepared, more match fit than teams that are coming from Sweden and from England? Because we spoke to Kelly Smith, and obviously their first game of the season for this year was their quarterfinal against Birmingham. And obviously, they're coming up against teams later on that potentially have had more games and more opportunities earlier in the season.
I think that comes from an outside perspective, because what people don't understand, outside looking in, is that footballers these days don't have time off. There might be a week or so here or there, but their periodisation for any season, international, domestic, is a whole 12 months. So, yes, you can say that, but all these teams will still be having competitive matches in other guises. So I don't think, and I agree with Kelly, where they don't have an advantage, because all these girls, the majority of them now are full-time footballers. They may not be professional, but they're training full-time. And that's why we're seeing the standard improve year after year.
Okay, I think that's enough on the Champions League. But seeing as we are talking about Wolfsburg, we should quickly go over to the Frauen Bundesliga. There is a game this coming weekend between Frankfurt and Wolfsburg. Frankfurt currently a point ahead of their rivals, and it is the last game of the season with Wolfsburg being the home team. Kessler, Gersling, Pop, all those players coming up against Alushi, Bartusiak, Sasic. It's going to be an enthralling encounter, isn't it?
It is. It's a massive, massive game. The only reason why I would put my money on Wolfsburg is because of their experience in the Champions League. This is another final for them. And having that experience of coming from two goals down and winning the Champions League, mentally, they've definitely got the advantage. But again, last game, you just never know. Unpredictable. Never know what could happen.
It's going to be fascinating, isn't it? And what's also fascinating is that to be in a Potsdam for the first time in a few years, not going to be in the Champions League next season. They drew with Kloppenburg a couple of weeks ago, which was a shock result because Kloppenburg, being honest, have been quite poor this season. They obviously lost to Frankfurt this past weekend, which ruled them out of the Champions League. I mean, that's going to be a big blow to them because they've got some promising young players like the likes of Ada Hegerberg, who wants to play in the Champions League and wants to be playing at the top. And I don't want to add to any speculation that already exists, but they're going to struggle to keep hold of players like that with no Champions League, aren't they?
Of course they are. And I think, again, we just go back to the standard of football and the depth of football now in women's football, how much it's improving. A club like Wolfsburg, the men's club, started to invest in a long-term project with Wolfsburg. And I think that's coming to fruition now. And that's where you see it in every single league. You see it with Liverpool in the WSL. You're already seeing it, I think, with Man City. That long-term vision and the investment, not just to make these girls professional players, but the full-time environment is what's giving them the advantage. And I think that's where Wolfsburg are starting to make ground.
Okay, well, we could talk about it all day, but actually I managed to catch up with a member of the Wolfsburg team just after the UEFA Women's Champions League final, Nila Fischer. So I spoke to Nila about the Champions League final, the final game showdown with Frankfurt, and what's coming up for her national team, Sweden. So here she is. Okay, so for the latest edition of the Women's Football Podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by a UEFA Women's Champions League winner. Yes, I am, of course, talking a few days after the final to Swedish defender come midfielder Nila Fischer. Nila, thanks for joining me on the show. First of all, tell me what an absolute mega game it was out in Portugal. How were the celebrations after the game?
Yeah, it was a crazy evening, of course. It's my first Champions League and the second for Wolfsburg in a row, and I think the game had it all. We were down 0-2, and then we made 2-2, and then Tyres would take the lead again, but we won in the end. And I mean, it was a great evening and night and morning.
Well, let's rewind a bit. Obviously, you go into that final probably as favourites, but Tirso's financial problems and the issues that surround the club have been well documented. Number one, did you feel the pressure going into that final being favourites? But number two, were you also quite conscious that this was almost like a last chance for Tirso to get a Champions League because they are going to lose so many players?
No, I think we enjoy the situation of being a little bit like the favourites. It's good. We had a lot of self-confidence for the games against Potsdam in the Champions League as well, and also in the Bundesliga. So I think we enjoyed that situation. And yeah, number two, I mean, of course, we knew about the financial situation for Tyresö, but I think that because of that was their last game, I think it made them stronger. They wanted to show everybody that they were there to play soccer, and all the financial problems were outside for the club to handle.
Mm. Well, it wasn't an easy route for you to get to the final, was it? Because of the way the seedings worked, you obviously had to overcome Malmo, who are obviously now Rosengard, earlier in the competition. Then you had a very difficult semi-final against Potsdam. Did those two wins in particular give you a lot of confidence going into the final against Tirso?
Yeah, I think so. Because, yeah, they're two really good teams. And, I mean, we didn't lose one single game of those four games. So I think we felt strong, and we knew that we had a really good chance of winning when we went into the final.
So let's talk about the final. You obviously come out, the game starts at quite a frantic pace, and within half an hour you find yourself 2-0 down thanks to Marta and Vero Bekete getting some nice goals. How did the team respond to that? Were you a bit shell-shocked? How did you kind of deal with that situation? Because it's quite difficult to come from 2-0 down against any team, but a team that contains the quality of Tirso, that's not easy, is it?
No, I mean, they played a really good attacking game, and we couldn't find our positions and didn't run enough, and we were not compact enough in the first half. So, I mean, during the first half, we were not able to, fix our game. But in halftime, we just said, okay, we have 45 minutes left, and we just have to give everything. We have to run as crazy person and find the team spirit and just go in and play our game, because it's a final, and we knew that we turned the game against Potsdam, and we knew that we can do it again. So yeah, it was an amazing second half for us, but we had a big problem during the first half with their attacking game.
Tell me what it's like
to play against someone like Marta. She's heralded across the world as one of the greatest players to ever play in the game. She was all over the place during the final. She scored a wonderful goal in the final. What's it like for someone like yourself who's having to mark someone like that, or at least be on the same pitch and trying to deal with that threat?
I mean, of course, it's a challenge. It's a big challenge, and it's fun. It's fun to play against her because you never know what she's going to do. And she's both fast and she has a very good technique. So you have to be on your A game to be able to, take her down or to win playing against her. But it's usually mostly fun. But sometimes it's hard as well. Like in the first half, it wasn't so fun playing against her because she was so good. Mm. But yeah, you just have to try to get her, to get close to her and play physical.
Dare I ask what Ralf Kellermann said to you at halftime that made you come out so quickly in the second half?
Yeah, he actually didn't. He wasn't that angry or anything, or he just tried to somehow find, like, our spirit to believe in ourselves, that we had the quality to win against them even though we were down 2-0. But he was, of course, saying that we have to run more and play faster and use the space, because there's always one player free if we do what we're supposed to do.
I think from my personal perspective as a spectator, I think the key thing in the second half was you really did raise the pace. I think Tirso were very quick in the first half. Wolfsburg probably a little bit off the pace, but I guess one of the things I'd ask is, you must look around the pitch. I've spoken a lot about Tirso's players, but you've got Lena Gusling, who was obviously nominated as World Player of the Year. You've got players like Nadine Kessler and Alexandra Popp, who are experienced players. You must go into that second half thinking, well, I've got all these players around me. This game is no way over.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, like you said, if you look around you, you know you have the chance to turn almost any game with the players we have. And I think when we change and have Poppy on the as an attacker, then we have a lot of power in the close to the goal in the penalty area. So we used our qualities more in the second half. Like, our wings are very fast. We use those more and play with a higher tempo, like you say.
But obviously, you mentioned Pop there, but it was one of your old guard, Martina Müller, with two goals. I mean, explain to me what she brings to the team, because she does have a habit of popping up with goals in important matches, doesn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she's Miss Wolfsburg, you could say. I mean, she's been playing here for so many years, and she's always, she's a killer in front of the goal. And she gives a lot of heart, and she never stops fighting. So you know, if you put the ball in, she's gonna be there. So she means a lot to the team, of course, and brings her spirit to the others.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned earlier on that this was your first Champions League. I mean, for you, number one, what did it mean to win your first Champions League? And number two, what was it like playing and winning against a Swedish team?
I mean, this has been one of my goals for a few years now, and that was one of the reasons why I came to this team, to be able to play in Champions League and also have a very good chance of winning. So it meant a lot to me personally. Now it's like I've reached one of my goals. Now I can aim for my next one. It's just an amazing feeling. And yeah, it's a Swedish team. It was, it's more fun, but otherwise, if like after the game, it's I feel no difference. I'm just really happy to have won the game.
Absolutely.
I guess the Swedish team or whatever.
Well, look, I don't do this show to try and get players into trouble or get controversial comments out of them. But one question I would have is, we mentioned earlier there's been quite a lot of publicity around Tirso and their financial problems. Not focusing too much on them solely, but from your perspective as a Swedish player and looking at the impact it's having on the Swedish league, does it disappoint you that it's kind of got to this point where they are in such problems, or do you kind of separate yourself from it and don't take too much notice of it?
No, I mean, I take more notice of it because it's a Swedish team, and I feel sad for the club, like the other part of the club that doesn't have anything to do with this, because they also get a bad name because of yeah, whoever is responsible for what happened has done this. And yeah, I feel sad because it's not good for Swedish soccer, like for our value to have this in the press, and it's not giving the league a good reputation. So yeah, I'm disappointed of the persons who couldn't handle the club or the money. So and it was a really good team. So it's sad for the league to lose such a good team, because they have good quality and it's fun to watch them play.
Absolutely. Well, you obviously moved to Wolfsburg from Linköping. Do you ever see yourself finishing up back in Sweden, or are you sort of focused very much on what's going on at Wolfsburg at the moment? I know you've not been there for very long.
I mean, of course, I focus a lot on what's happened here, because I have one more year left at the contract right now. But yeah, I think I will finish in Sweden, in the Swedish league. I don't know when, but I hope that I can play one or two more years in the Swedish league.
Good. Okay. Well, look,
everything is open.
Absolutely. Well, let's focus on what's going on closer to home where you are. Obviously, we've spoken about the Champions League, and congratulations again on winning the tournament. Back at home in Germany, it's an incredibly tight finish to the Bundesliga, with Frankfurt, Wolfsburg and Potsdam only separated by a couple of points. There's a huge game on the last day of the season, and it will be a few days away by the time this show comes out, between yourselves and Frankfurt. I mean, that must be something that you're looking forward to immensely.
Yeah, of course. We have it all on our own to win the league. If we win the two games that are left, we win the Bundesliga. So, I mean, if we win against Kloppenburg now this weekend, then it all comes down to the last game against Frankfurt, and we have them at home. So if that happens, it's going to be an amazing game, and I think there will be a lot of spectators to get the atmosphere as good as it can.
And that'd be amazing for you, wouldn't it? I mean, this is your first season at Wolfsburg, to potentially come away from it with a UEFA Women's Champions League and a German Bundesliga. I guess this is one of the big reasons why you decided to move to Wolfsburg in the first place.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they have a great team, a great organization, and they have the goals to win titles. And yeah, when you're almost 30, that's one of the things you wanna do, win titles. So yeah, of course, it's what's one of the reasons I came here. It's really good.
Okay, and obviously, looking a little bit further away, we have in a couple of weeks the World Cup qualifiers recommence, and Sweden have a big game in the UK. You are coming over to Scotland, which is going to be potentially a top of the table clash. Well, it is a top of the table clash. I mean, how much are you looking forward to that one, and how much of a test do you see the Scottish team being?
I think it's going to be a big test. I mean, they scored more goals than us, and what I've heard or what I've seen is that they play good soccer as well. So it's not only that they can score, that they play better and better the more they play together. So it's going to be a challenge for us, and we have to win the games against them to be the first in the group. I mean, so of course we look forward to it, because many of the other teams are not so good. So it's going to be fun to play a high quality game with the national team now.
Well, you obviously come up against a few Scots in Germany, don't you? Obviously, Lisa Evans plays up front for Potsdam. But looking at the qualification period as a whole, it's obviously coming off of the back of Euro 2013 last year. Have you noticed more interest in the Swedish women's national team? And with that extra added interest, if there has been any, has there been a bit more pressure on the team to perform, obviously, with the World Cup coming up next year?
The interest has increased, first of all, since Pia got to lead the team, and then after the Euros, the players, like, we are more popular among the Swedish people and around Europe, I think. And so it's fun to see that the European champions made us like more popular to the people, or whatever you say. So, yeah, we have a little bit more pressure on us now, because we really we want to go to the World Cup, and in the World Cup we're gonna aim for the highest medal. So it's up to us to perform now. But I think it's fun with the pressure. It's a challenge to play and prove yourself to everybody.
Now I had Kosovari Aslani on the show a little while ago, and I asked her whether any players had got up on stage and sung with Pia. She said Olivia was one of them. I want to ask, have you ever got up on stage with Pia? And if you haven't, will we ever see it happen?
I haven't. And I doubt it that I will. I know that I'm a really bad singer. so I hope for my own sake that I never do it. And for everybody or others.
Other than Olivia, has anyone else dropped themselves in it by getting up on stage and embarrassing themselves a little bit?
I think Caroline Segal could do that. And maybe, Emma Bylund, the defender, I think she's also able to go on the stage and sing and be a little embarrassing.
Well, I hope if they ever do, or if they ever have done, we'll get a rendition on the show at some point. But Neela, I'm going to end the interview there because I've kept you for more than long enough. But again, very much want to wish you congratulations on winning the UEFA Women's Champions League. As I stated earlier, one of the best women's games I've ever seen anywhere in the world. A fantastic achievement for you, and obviously the best of luck in the conclusion of the Bundesliga and obviously in the World Cup qualification games coming up.
Thank you very much.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
Okay, so that was Neela Fischer talking all things Wolfsburg and Sweden. Thanks to Neela again for coming on the show. So let's turn our attention closer to home. The Women's Super League and the FA Cup. In fact, let's start with the FA Cup final, seeing as it's the most recent event over here in England. Arsenal ladies coming out 2-0 winners over Everton ladies at Milton Keynes Dons Stadium. Ish, you saw the final, so did I. What did you make of it?
I did see the final. It was from the comfort of my couch with a beer in hand. I think Arsenal thoroughly deserved it. They were definitely the better team on the day. It was a shame. You could always see that Everton were going to need to absorb pressure and then hit on the counter-attack. And there were some promising signs early on, but I think as the game wore on, and it's very, very difficult when you don't have possession and you're defending for such long periods of time, that's really tiring. It's hard work mentally and it's hard work physically, and I think Kelly Smith had a wonderful game. Dan Carter, I think, is an exceptional talent, and I've known that for the past couple of years. And they, you know what? Arsenal seems so much more balanced than I've seen them in the WSL this season.
Doesn't matter if you're 35 or 25, when you've got a wand of a left foot like Kelly Smith and the ability that she's got, you're going to have a good chance of winning games, aren't you?
Of course. I mean, Kelly, that's what makes the great players great, is that flash of brilliance that no one else can bring out in their game, I guess. It was unfortunate. It was definitely a foul on the edge of the box. Tough position for Rachel Brown because it's so close. It was about a yard outside the 18-yard box. Her wall, I think, was questionable, but then where do you set it up when you've got Kelly Smith lining up with her left foot? But all credit to Kelly. I mean, she dinked it into that far corner. It was fantastic.
No word of a lie, I was sat next to Hamish in the press box. Obviously, he was there representing Everton. As soon as she lined that up, I said to him, mate, she's going to clip this top corner.
Yeah, you could see as soon as she put the ball down and no one else was standing near it, I was sat here thinking this is going to be a goal. It was too close, and she's got far too much technique and expertise in that area to think that anything else was going to happen than a goal.
But it wasn't just us that were obviously raving about Kelly Smith's performance. Rachel Yankee was in the post-match press conference, and she had this to say about Kelly's performance.
Every time, isn't it? This is Kelly, this is what she does. You know, so, I expect nothing less of her. So, you know, you'd be stupid if you think anything that Kelly ain't going to come here and put on a show. You know, she's been brilliant all season. And, you know, she's playing with little injuries, and obviously we've had injuries this season, which has been, you know, it's been hard. And obviously after the break, hopefully we'll get Jordan back, and that'll be a massive plus for us. But no, Kelly Smith is Kelly Smith. That's why, you know, she's rated one of the best in the world. You know, you shouldn't expect anything less.
So that was Rachel Yankee, very complimentary about Kelly's performance. Obviously, there's a sub-story to this as well. Shelley Kerr, obviously, it was her last game in charge of Arsenal ladies. I mean, it's a real shame, isn't it? I've got a lot of time for Shelley. I've spoken to her a few times on recording and off recording, and I think she's going to be missed. And I think a lot of people would like her to have stayed and to see if they could have improved their league form. I mean, what's your take on it, Ish? You watch a lot of WSL football.
I do. And again, yeah, I've dealt with Shelley a number of times on the WSL and enjoyed working with her. It just shows you how much pressure now positions like being the Arsenal women's manager are, you know, with the coaches they're put under. And it was a difficult position for Shelley. She lost a lot of players, a lot of great players at the end of last season. And there's a lot of speculation about why a lot of those players left. And also, she had such big shoes to fill, with Laura Harvey being so well respected and so successful in her stint as Arsenal manager. It's almost like, I feel for Shelley, and I wouldn't want to make any comparison, but it's almost like the Fergie David Moyes, you know, curse. And it's a shame that she has left. It's lovely that she went out on a high, winning the FA Cup. I was sitting there watching the game thinking, surely if you've won the FA Cup, wouldn't you think you could go on and get the best out of that team? I don't know. It's a funny one because the team has been underperforming and underachieving this season, yet they go out and pull out a really great performance for the FA Cup. Why couldn't Shelley do that on a consistent basis? I don't know the answer. Only the players and only Shelley know that.
Yeah, well, I managed to sit in, as I say, on the post-match press conference, and Shelley Kerr was questioned about her future and the performance. So here she is, and we also managed to get a few words with Andy Spence. So here they both are, one after the other.
Got a lot of young players in your team, of course. So it's a really good learning experience for them.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And, you know, said to the players, you know, it's important now that we learn from this experience. And it is an experience where, you know, positive and negative experiences will happen to teams and players right the way throughout their careers. So we use this now as when we come back to cup finals in the future, then we know what it's like to come away and not win. And so next time we'll be, you know, in a better position, I would say, you know, in terms of dealing with the whole occasion. You know, as you say, we've got a lot of young players, and I think that showed as the game went on. Arsenal's experience of managing the game, they did that really well, and we tried to chase it and get back in. There was no lack of effort, it was just, you know, a lack of quality at times. But that happens when you play, you know, really top teams like Arsenal.
What about yourself now?
I knew that was coming.
You must be so disappointed to have had to make that decision, but what next for you?
I'm going to go home and I'm going to walk my dog and I'm going to have a holiday, because when you're involved in football at a professional level, and you guys all know this as well, you work round the clock. So for many, many years now, I've relied on a network of friends and family that, you know, I've helped bring up my daughter as well. So I'm going to be a mum for a couple of weeks, and I'm going to chill and reflect and evaluate.
But you'll not be walking away from football?
No, absolutely not. It's all I know. I've been involved, as I say, since I was 5 years old, first as a player and then as a coach. I've worked at all levels, you know. And yeah, I'll be back involved, hopefully, in some shape or form.
So that was Shelley Kerr and Andy Spence evaluating the FA Cup final. We'll move now on to the Women's Super League. Seems appropriate, seeing as we're in England. People keep saying it's the midway point of the season. There's only four games in. I'm getting fed up of people talking about that. It's ridiculous. Doesn't matter who's top, who's bottom. There is 10 games left. We're not halfway through the season. Yes, there has been Continental Cup games, but this is still very early days, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm still not sure why there's a mid-season post four matches and Continental Cup break. I have absolutely no idea why that happens. Don't think it's needed. The season isn't long enough, I don't think, to warrant it. But hey, I don't work for the powers that be.
They could have at least played up to the World Cup, couldn't they? I can understand if they don't want to compete with the World Cup. With the Men's World Cup starting on the 12th of June, the last league fixtures were the end of May. Now, why couldn't they have played up to maybe the 10th or the 11th of June? The World Cup starts on the 12th. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, it makes no sense for people to think that they're competing with the World Cup. What do you mean? Games on TV are few and far between. We have highlight shows. What are they competing with? This is a domestic league for a lot of international players, you just get on with it and you play. There's no reason for them to stop unless there's specific international FIFA dates for qualifiers or the such. But you shouldn't be making decisions based on a men's World Cup, which, by the way, is in Brazil. It's not in England.
I'm not sure if they have. That was just my assumption.
So I've just completely started having a go at people for no reason. Yeah, yeah. I do. I'll just start annoying Pete. Yeah, no, that's fine. Take it all back.
That anger was aimed at me. That anger was aimed at me. But no, I mean, early days in the WSL, but I think for me, the team that has impressed, Notts County Ladies, have done very well. Jess Clark has certainly been, for me, the standout player of the first half. Not many people, I don't think, will have been talking about her as one of the early contenders for player of the season. But she's done really well, hasn't she, in a role that she's not necessarily too familiar with, playing the number nine.
Yeah, Jess has done really well. I personally think that the revelation has been Dunya Susie, who has been at Chelsea for a couple of years in different form. And I'm sure, well, maybe she may agree with that, but she's had, it's a breath of fresh air. And I think for her, she's playing in a more attacking role with a lot more freedom, popping up with some crucial goals. And seeing her at the Chelsea Notts County game that BT Sport covered a couple of weeks ago, in the first probably 10 or 15 minutes, Chelsea were really struggling with her down the right-hand side. She just, you can see she's enjoying her football. And I think enjoying it and having that confidence is relating to her performances.
I must say, I'm a big fan of Dunya. I've watched her for the last few years and I've always been impressed by what she's been able to produce. Another team still doing fairly well and fighting at the right end of the table is Chelsea Ladies. What have you made of them? Pretty solid at the back and not too bad going forward either, are they?
Chelsea have a great squad, and talking to the players from Chelsea, the atmosphere, the training environment, they're all ticks in the right boxes. Emma Hayes has got some exceptional players in. They just, the key player for them is Ji So Yoon. When she is not playing, you definitely see how much of an impact and her ability to link play from defence to attack is taken away. And I could see that against Notts County. They just looked a little bit disjointed. She's been a fantastic signing, and I think Emma was really upset that she wasn't able to play that game due to concussion. But she really is the linchpin for that Chelsea side.
I agree. Now, if we went through all eight teams, we'd be here all day. I think one of the teams that maybe surprised a few people is Man City. Obviously started the season with a couple of defeats. The Vultures were out saying that they'll be relegated, but managed to string a few good results together, including a win at Arsenal. They're going about their business and not necessarily proving people wrong, but maybe living up to the hypes in a small way to what people were expecting at the start of the season.
They are doing well, KT, but I do have to, and I know this has been a bit of a bugbear for the Birmingham City Ladies, that no one still seems to be talking about them. Everyone thought, well, you know,
I was going to finish on them because they're top, but you've ruined it for me. But no, you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. And I think rightfully so. And I am sorry to interrupt, but I was going to finish with Birmingham. But you're absolutely right. They have been the best side of the season because results don't lie and the table doesn't lie. They are top of the league. They have been solid all over the pitch. One of the players I picked out at the beginning of the season when we had Kelly on was Aoife Mannion. I think she's been solid at the back. Kaz Kearney, I know you get on very well with, is the Ji So Yoon of the Birmingham team. When Kaz Kearney is ticking, Birmingham play well. And you're giggling. God, why are you giggling?
I'm giggling because, yes, I know Kaz so well and she's such a Brummy. And the Ji So Yoon, I am definitely going to give her pelters for your for your comparison to her. She's like the Brummy South Korean international. Brilliant. Absolutely love it. No, I mean, yeah, I love Kaz. She's one of my very good mates and she's a natural footballer. She's got a footballer's brain. She loves to analyse the game. She's a bit of a football nerd like me, so I think that's why we get on. Loves a bit of banter. But I like the fact that it's annoyed the Birmingham City team. I like that because it's kind of nice to fly under the radar and think, oh yeah, everyone else out there isn't even giving us the credit or respect that we deserve. And, you know, they got to a Champions League semi-final. That's no mean feat in women's football these days. And as I said, it wasn't It wasn't saying that you weren't going to talk about Birmingham, but I do know and I do understand why they want people to step up and take a little bit more notice of them rather than just going, oh, wow, that's a surprise. Birmingham are on top of the table.
I think Everton are another team that probably feel that they haven't had the chat that maybe they warranted. I know that they lost players again, but they've got a lot of young players. And yes, they lost the FA Cup final to Arsenal. And yes, some might argue that they were outplayed, but it's good experience for them. And I think Andy said that in his post-match press conference, that every big game that they have is going to be experience for that young side. And the more experience that team gets and the longer they stay together, the better they're going to get. But we'll finish on Arsenal. And the reason I want to finish on Arsenal is we mentioned earlier that Shelley Kerr has obviously now resigned. Few names are being thrown around. Keith Buanes, who was obviously linked with the England position, is obviously based out in Estonia. He very nearly joined Lincoln Ladies as they were before they became Notts County. Who, if you were in charge of the recruitment for Arsenal, would you look at bringing in? Because I was speaking to you just before the recording and I mentioned Tom Samani's name. Tom is obviously out of work at the moment. Outside bet?
When you said that, I can't believe I hadn't, I guess I hadn't really thought about who Shelley's replacement would be, but I think that would be a great shout. Tommy and Laura have very, very similar views on football, very similar personalities, very similar man management style, and I think that would probably suit the Arsenal Ladies Football Club. So I might just send him a text and see if he wants to. I mean, it'd be great. You know, if Tommy was living in London, there'd be plenty of catch-ups over wine and talking football. It'd be fantastic. Apart from that, again, you know, it was big shoes to fill. There's not that many well-known names who have proven themselves in the world of women's football. So it might be, I don't know, is Kel ready to step up? It'd be, she still wants to play. I understand that.
I spoke to Kelly at an event last week and did pose the question to her, and I think she's honoured to be mentioned as a possible replacement for Shelley, but she's pretty open and honest that she isn't really ready for the position at the moment. She's currently taking her coaching qualifications, and I think she'd like to finish those before she's considered worthy to take that position. If she was asked, I think she said on the BBC Women's Football Show, if she was asked to step in, I think it would be difficult for her not to accept it. But I don't think that she'll be applying for it. But I mean, Tom is very much an outside, you know, flash in the pan suggestion by me. I think you're right, but I think who had Shelley Kerr named as a potential Arsenal manager to replace Laura?
Of course. I actually, now that you've said that, KT, and knowing Tommy, I don't think it is. It depends how they go about the process, whether they do headhunt and want to go after people. Maybe if Tommy becomes a coach based on this discussion, do you reckon we're due 10-15% like agents fee?
Absolutely. And
maybe you're due probably 10, I'm due 2%, but let's negotiate that.
It'd be interesting to see. So that should round up our WSL chat, and when we come back we'll have a very quick look at what's going on in Europe and we'll have a chat about the NWSL.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so that was our WSL chat. Now, I said before the break that we were going to go into Europe and the NWSL, and we're not going to do that because I want to have a quick chat with Ish about the Asia Cup. Obviously, it was won by Japan in Vietnam, and as a result of Japan winning, they qualify for the World Cup alongside runners-up Australia, China, South Korea and Thailand for the first time in their World Cup. How cool is it going to be to see Thailand in a Women's World Cup?
Tell you what, Thailand are going to surprise some people. I've played against Thailand in the Asia Cup on numerous occasions. They're a difficult team. The great thing about Thailand is that they remind me a little bit of the Equatorial Guineas of the world, who they're not content just to sit back and absorb pressure. They will actually go out and play, and they can be really unpredictable, and that's probably one of the most difficult things to come up against as a player. When you know what to expect from the opposition, you can put plans in place to work with that. When you have absolutely no idea what's going to happen on the field on the day, it can throw you, you know, any good plan out the window.
I think it's going to be cool. I like to see nations given a chance, and I think it'll be great to see Thailand out there. Now, as I said, the final was between Japan and Australia. I was amazed and surprised, and this does show the gaps in not talking about the Premier League, shows the gaps in my knowledge historically. I didn't even know it was Japan's first Asia Cup. How on earth has that come about?
No, it's not Japan's. Oh, their first Asia Cup win,
yeah.
Do you mean? Ah, right, okay. I think back in the day, Japan have only just started to become a powerhouse in women's football, probably in the last 3 or 4 years. We've always known that they've been difficult to play against, but it used to be all China. China and North Korea were so difficult, but now that those two teams have started dwindling away and Japan have actually had some success on the international stage, that's the main reason. The Asian Confederation is a very, very difficult confederation to compete in. It's been great for the Matildas. It's been great for us, for our development, and I think that's why we keep getting better. But you've got South Korea, I know, pushover. They're a difficult team. Japan, excellent. And that team, I can remember the players from this Japan team who are winning World Cups and silver medals at the Olympics, playing against them probably 8 or 9 years ago, and them still being exceptional as they are now, but just not being able to get themselves over the line to win something big. But China have definitely fallen off over the last 5 or 6 years. And North Korea, goodness knows what's happening in North Korea at any day of the week, really.
No one really knows. Only Dennis Rodman knows what's going on in North Korea.
Well, I have been there 3 times, so I did know what was going on. But actually, it's probably the same as when I was there last.
Well, obviously, yes, you're right. China, I know about China's kind of dominance in the 90s and the early noughties, and obviously now Japan taking that mantle. But I guess as an Australian, you must be disappointed that they weren't able to reclaim their title, but encouraged again by the fact they got to the final. They knocked out South Korea along the way. I mean, they, for me, continue to get better and better. I spoke to Helen Ward on a recent show, and I am still of the belief, and you may agree or disagree, that they have some of the best young players in the world coming through, and keep gelling them and keep making them better, you never know where this team might go.
Completely agree with you. Watching the Asia Cup just enforced to me how good the development systems are in Australia. Those girls coming through academies and institute in the Australian setup, we have great coaches there. We've got great training environments. The support that those girls have from such a young age, I think, is now showing with this squad. Yeah, you're right. We do have some of the best young players. There are so many that I could name. Katrina Gorry is outstanding and has just come onto the scene probably in the last couple of years. Tamika Butt, Elise Kellen-Knight. You've got Sam Kerr, Caitlin Ford. The list goes on and on. Polks, you know, Lydia Williams. This crop of Aussie players, if they have the right environment and can continue to develop over the next couple of cycles for Olympics, World Cups, you're right. Goodness knows what could happen. I think the biggest thing for us, and it always has been for us, is we do seem to do things the hard way. So we've got the ability and we've got the skill, and then we just tend to stitch ourselves up and let other teams back into games through silly mistakes. If we can start getting that out of our game, tell you what, we're always difficult to play, but the sky's the limit.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the Asia Cup. I managed to watch a few games on streams while I was out in the States and when I got back to the UK, and I think Japan were worthy winners, but I think Australia pushed them all the way, and obviously that was reflected in the scoreline, which obviously finished 1-0. So we're going to move on from the Asia Cup. We're going to have a quick look at what's going on in Europe. We'll move over to France. I never really know what to talk about in France, because all I ever seem to say is Lyon have won, and they have won again, and they have won another French championship. Dominance once again, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. It's definitely a two-horse race over there with PSG and Lyon. Lyon by far, you know, over and above PSG. And I think whatever happens in their domestic league, I think all the fans around the world are more interested in how they perform in Champions League.
I think that's right. And obviously Patrice Lair is leaving his position at the end of the season. Maybe Tom Samani will fancy the Lyon job.
Maybe. Where else can we link Tommy to go? France? Yeah, definitely. He loves a good red wine. London? Yeah, he'd love London. Where else can we? Are there any other open jobs available? Back to the Aussie job?
Yeah, maybe. Jokes aside, they will obviously be in the Champions League next season alongside PSG. They have also qualified. JVC are probably the only other team that can at least compete with them. Montpellier, not too bad, but for me, I don't like to see leagues so heavily dominated by 1, 2, or 3 sides. I mean, that's why I like the NWSL and the WSL. They are leagues where anybody is capable of beating anybody. Moving over to Sweden, obviously the big news is Tyresö have now lost half of their team. Marta has left the club. Vera Bikete has gone off to Portland. The three American players, Kristen Press, Megan Klingenberg, and Whitney Engen, have also left. Their last game was a 2-1 win over Rosengard, who are obviously the league champions. That's one hell of a statement to make as you depart, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one way to leave. That's definitely... it's a shame that all those players have left, but I guess as a player, you need to do what's in your best interest. And I think for the American players, they're under contract to actually go back and be involved in the NWSL. And with the financial issues and the uncertainty of what's going to happen next season, you can understand that the players like Vero and Marta are going to look elsewhere.
We'll finish off Europe there. And when we come back, we will have a chat about the NWSL.
Download and subscribe to the show on iTunes.
Just search for Women's Football Podcast.
We'll move over to America. Obviously, I spent some time out there, as I have mentioned, time and time and time and time again, and people will be bored of that. But the NWSL, still being led by the Seattle Reign, and Kim Little continues to show the world what she is capable of, doesn't she?
She certainly does. I think because Kim plays for Scotland and they still haven't broken through to the international stage for a World Cup, I think it's really unfortunate that quite possibly one of the best players in the world, in my opinion, isn't recognised in things like the FIFA Ballon d'Or for women. I think Kim has just proven that she's been able to be successful in the WSL. She's moved to an American league and she is absolutely killing it. And I'm not surprised that she's killing it because it's not just Kim. I think you've got another completely, not going to say underrated, but Jess Fishlock for me is the Vidal of women's football. Vidal, the Juventus midfielder, who is a box-to-box midfielder, a tough tackler and scores goals as well. With those two on the team and Laura Harvey as the coach, I think it's just a recipe for success.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I actually put a tweet out a few weeks ago saying something along those lines that
is... We do agree sometimes.
I put a tweet out suggesting Jess Fishlock should be, or should she be, considered to be a nominee for the Ballon d'Or because of the performances that she's putting in for Seattle. Not only that, but she's scoring goals for Wales as well. But it comes down to the same point that you made about Kim. She is a Welsh international. The chances of Wales qualifying for a major tournament are slim. They're certainly not impossible, but they are slim. Kim certainly has more of a chance with Scotland. But it is a shame, isn't it? I think there have been examples in men's football where players have been playing for smaller nations and haven't been recognised. And because you may never see Kim or Jess on a World Cup stage, they may never get the recognition that they deserve. But there's certainly two players that are tearing up in the NWSL. Another player who is doing very well out there after returning from pregnancy is Amy Rodriguez. I mean, she was a player that Laura Harvey decided to trade so that she could get Sydney Leroux. So I certainly don't think she has any regrets. In fact, she was asked during a press conference after the Kansas game that I was at, did she have regrets about trading Amy Rodriguez? And she's like, well, I got Sydney Leroux in return. So how can I regret that? But Amy's certainly doing some business out there, isn't she? Second in the goal scoring charts behind Kim Little at the moment.
Yeah, and I think it just shows you sometimes a new lease of life, maybe after you go and have a kid. Maybe every female footballer should just go and pop out a baby and then come back, score goal after goal. Laura's right. For that trade, Amy for Sydney Leroux, Sydney's a great player, and while she hasn't been scoring the goals that Amy has, maybe Amy fits better into the setup at Kansas City than maybe she would have in Seattle, because Seattle do have... I think with Seattle, what I've seen of them, they just have a very balanced side. I think if you look of... I heard Gus Hiddink said this a long, long time ago when he coached the Australian men's team. The spine of your team is the most important thing, and then you can have, you know, a lot of flexibility around the outside. If you look at the spine of that Seattle team and how well balanced it is, it's a win-win situation. They've got quality players, but it's a really nicely balanced team. And I think that's the key thing, and that's why they're doing so well.
Another team that's doing quite well, managed by an English coach, is Washington Spirit. They played this past weekend away in Boston and managed to achieve a 3-2 victory. Jodie Taylor grabbing a brace. They're going about their business quietly, but they're slowly creeping up the league, aren't they?
They certainly are. Not just... I watched that game last night to watch my good mate Lisa Devanna. Not just the fact that you've got an English coach and Jodie scored two goals, but Leanne Sanderson scored two goals as well. Jodie scored a typical Jodie Taylor goal for me, in behind the defence, one-on-one with the keeper, no mistakes. And I'd be interested to see whether Mark Sampson's thinking of possibly giving her another chance to come back into the England setup.
Well, Well, I tweeted during the game that if it was me that was making a decision for the next England game, I would play Leanne in behind Jodie. I would play both of them. So the fact they both scored two last night, I'm with you. I would have a look at both of them. Why not? Good case?
Yeah, I agree. I actually think they're different players. I agree with you. I think Leanne is very good with her back to goal, very good at holding it up and drops in a little bit deeper, maybe similar to like a Wayne Rooney, likes to get the ball and then drive at people. Jodie is very much, she excels when she's getting in behind the defence. She's a very good finisher and she's good when she gets a little bit of space and can run at mainly the goalkeeper one-on-one. Not just that though, if we're talking about all these players and even the Natasha Dowies and... Gosh, England, I think England are going to be a massive surprise. Not a surprise. I feel good things for the England team at next year's World Cup. I think that they've got the right environment. They've got some quality attacking players. Tony Duggan's on fire as well. They're playing, you can see in their World Cup qualifiers, they're enjoying their football. They're playing with a lot more freedom and flexibility and they're able to express themselves. And that's, you know, that's a good thing that you've got so many options.
American listeners are thinking, why are you talking about England when we're talking about the NWSL? Go back to the NWSL, otherwise I'm switching off. So we will go back to the NWSL. One team currently struggling a little bit at the moment, which is a surprise considering the quality that they've got. Carly Lloyd, Abby Wambeck, Vicky Lasada, Adriana Martin, lots of other players. Western New York Flash, obviously did very well last season, got to the championship game, not so dominant this season.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that's a Western New York Flash issue, or maybe it's just that the league's getting better and that the quality's improving and that every game is difficult. And that's nice to see in a league as well. And I think that'll continue pushing players like Abby Wambach and Carly Lloyd. They're winners and they will hate seeing themselves in that position on the table. And you can guarantee that this season isn't over. I know Seattle are a fair few points in front, but you've got winners across the board on every single team. And, you know, I think Western New York are going to keep pushing right until the end, until there's absolutely no hope whatsoever.
Well, you're absolutely right. The season is no way over. And one of the reasons is Portland will have almost half a team joining them. Tobin Heath will be back soon after PSG's season finishes. Vera Baquetto, we've already mentioned, will be joining from Tirso. I think she's already out there, so she's likely to be involved in possibly the next game. Alex Morgan is very close to coming back from injury, and a player that you all know well, who has also flown out to America, is Steph Catley. What can we expect, or what can American supporters expect from Steph? I've seen a lot of her. I rate her very highly. Not one of the young players you mentioned earlier, by the way.
Yeah, I think, you know, not mentioning Steph earlier was just, I could have rattled off the whole Matildas team. And
no, I was being facetious. Don't worry, I was being facetious. I know you rate her. I know you rate her.
Steph, you know, Steph, I think, encapsulates everything that you want in a young player. She plays without fear. She's unpredictable, great engines, and is just technically, you know, there's not too many bad things to say about Steph. I think she is everything that a coach would want in a young, inexperienced player. And I'm excited to see how she's going to go out in America. I think she'll surprise a lot of people. And I think she's maybe along the vein as well, not having had the international experience, but the undervalued player like the Jess Fishlock, where you might not always appreciate the work that goes on behind the scenes, but she's an integral part of any team.
Well, a few players, as we mentioned earlier, who'll be returning to the NWSL is Megan Klingenberg, Whitney Engen and Kristen Press. When they played their last game for Tirso, Linda Eriksson, who is obviously based out in Stockholm and does some interviews for us now and again, managed to grab a quick word with the... I was going to say the three of them, but actually I think she spoke to, off the top of my head, Kristen Press and Megan Klingenberg. So here they are talking about their return to the NWSL.
I think it's bittersweet. I was just going to be bitter before, but we got the win, so it's bittersweet now. I think, you know, I've passed most of my adult life here in Sweden, and I never expected to be here. I never thought I would end up in Sweden. And now I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave this place. Everyone's been so good to me, and the football has been so good to me. And we're really sad. I'm going to be sad to leave my friends, not just on my team, but Anita Sante, who was playing against all day. She's one of my best friends from Sweden. I played with her my first year. And I've got friends all over this country now, and I'll be really sad to be 9-hour time difference away from them. But I'm sure I will be back to visit when I can, and I'm taking as much as I possibly can back with me.
It's always a mixture of feelings because it's always nice going home, see my family, be close to my friends. But I've been here for almost 2 years, and I've really come to really love Sweden and the people and the culture and Stockholm especially. So I think it's a lot of mixed feelings for me.
Okay, so that was Kristen and Megan talking about returning to the NWSL. Now, while I was out in Seattle, I had the pleasure of meeting a young British girl, Emma Follis, who is currently playing for the Seattle Sounders women's team in the USW League, which is a division that exists just outside of the NWSL. And Emma currently plays for Seattle, but also is a representative of Aston Villa Ladies in England. So I managed to have a chat with Emma on my return to the UK. So here she is having a chat about her time out in Seattle.
Okay, so Emma, thanks for joining us on the show. First of all, tell me how you are settling into life in Seattle, and how on earth does a girl from Birmingham in the West Midlands in England end up on the Pacific Northwest?
It's brilliant. Seattle's a great city, and the whole of Washington, really. It's just beautiful. Settled in pretty well. I was here last year playing for a WPSL team. One of the girls I play with back home kind of introduced me to Seattle and the idea of coming over here. And I sort of grabbed it with two hands, really, came over here. And I'm back here again this summer, but playing for the Sounders. So it's a slightly higher level in the W League. But no, I'm really, really enjoying it so far. It's a great bunch of girls, great city. Couldn't ask for any more, really.
Far away from Birmingham, isn't it?
Yeah, it's slightly different to Birmingham. I don't know, the climate's pretty similar. It kind of rains here occasionally and it's a bit overcast, but the city life's a bit different. It's really cool down in Seattle, and it's just nice to get away from home, I guess.
So you're playing for Seattle Sounders women, who play in the USW League. For those that don't know much about that division, we obviously know a lot about the NWSL because of the publicity that it gets and the streams that are available. But for those that don't know much about it, especially over here in England, what's the standard like and the setup like of the actual league itself?
It's obviously the NWSL is the pro league, so we're the ones below that. It's a good standard. It's mostly for college kids because they can't play for the pro team. So it's kind of getting them ready to either be drafted if they can get into the pro team. So it's a professional atmosphere. It's a pretty similar standard to back home, the league that I'm in, the WSL2. So it's a pretty nice transition. The type of football over here is a little bit different. It's a bit more physical and sort of, it's kind of hard, not hard work, but it's not as technical. It's getting better though. Like the Sounders have kind of got better as we've gone on. Like when I first got over here, it was really quite not slow, but we're kind of all gelling together, and the girls are starting to play some good football.
Well, you've come through the ranks at Aston Villa. I think I read that you've been there 12 or 13 years, and you're now having to adapt to a new style of football. Mm-hmm. How have you adapted to that, and what have you had to work on in your own game to make sure that you're able to compete with the other teams in your league?
I guess the fitness has had to be much better, like higher over here. Their Americans are like workhorses and they'll just run and run and run. So that's been a big thing. Sort of strength as well, that's been a big part of the game. But kind of the speed of play has been a bit quicker over here. Play back at home, it's great for technical, as I've said. Like all the girls back home can sort of ping a ball around all day. But I think it's that part of the physical edge of it has had to be a bit better over here for me, especially.
Now, unlike the NWSL, the setup for you is slightly different. You mentioned that you're kind of in the division below. You're out there pretty much just for the summer, and then you'll be coming back to Aston Villa. What are you hoping to achieve while you're out there in Seattle? Because you're also, people might not know, you're also training with the Seattle Reign as well, aren't you, outside of your Seattle Sounder training? I mean, what's that like for you, being able to train with those players?
It's unbelievable. Like the professionalism, like Laura has to be by far one of the best coaches out there at the moment. The team as a collective, one of the best in the world. So getting to train with them, the likes of Pino and Sydney and all those guys, is just like unbelievable, and I'm just so grateful to have it, really, to be able to get that chance to learn from them and to kind of be in that atmosphere. It's just, it's pretty special, so I'm just glad it's kind of all worked out how it has done, and I think it all sort of improved me as a player, which is always good.
And obviously you're 3 games into the season. It's a weird scheduling for you guys. You had 3 road games already. You now go into a period of 6 home games before finishing with 3 road games. 2 wins out of 3. Are you pleased with how the season has started, and what are the aims for the side? Because obviously you've got LA Blues in your division, managed by English coach Tracy Kevins. They've got England international Rachel Daly in the side as well. They are the team to beat. What is the Sounders' aims for the season?
I think it was kind of good that we've had the away trips early on, because it's might mean that we've been able to bond as a team more, because we're on flights together in hotels and stuff, and we've really got to know the team, and that's then helped us on the field. To get 6 points from 9 away, new team, like new experiences and stuff, is really good. We played against some good teams and in some harsh conditions. We played in Arizona last week, and that was just unbelievable. Like, my little English body struggled. But, yeah, I think we obviously want to reach the playoffs. We want to progress. When we play LA Blues again, we'd love to compete a bit more offensively, because they're a very good team. We want to try and put a few past them and get some points off them, but just to win each game as it comes, kind of take it as it comes and get to those playoffs in Florida would be brilliant.
Do you get much support from the Seattle Sounders men's side? Obviously huge team in the MLS, they get a big support, you know, 40,000-50,000. How much support do you get from them, and how do you feel about wearing that awful green shirt that they wear?
It's not that bad. I quite like it.
It's terrible. Terrible.
The men, we obviously get to train at the same complex as the men, so we see them around. We get use of all the fields, the facilities, the gym and the trainers and stuff, so that's pretty cool. We get to wear the kit and things. We have a lot of... Actually, we haven't had a home game yet, so I haven't really seen the fans of the home game. But we do get some hardcore Sounders fans with their drums and their flags, and they're brilliant. And it's so, like, it picks up the atmosphere. So the Sounders are known for their huge fan base. So hopefully, we'll get lots of people hear about us and come out and watch us. But yeah, no, it's pretty good.
And they're due back in England mid to end of July. The WSL2 will still be ongoing. Dare I ask how much you're looking forward to coming back to play for Villa? I know you've got to be diplomatic here because you are in a nice big city like Seattle, but on a serious note, how much are you looking forward to? It'll be your first experience of WSL2, obviously, with it being a new division.
Yeah, well, of course I love life over here, but it was such a tough decision to decide to come over here and not play for Villa, because they've been my team since I was 9, so missing a season or half a season has been pretty tough. It wasn't any decision, but I felt like this was something I had to do while I can, and if anything it will hopefully make me a better player for when I get back, and I am excited to get back and help them win and get as high on the table as possible. Joe's a great manager and he's been really understanding, so I'm super excited to get back with the team and start training with them again and playing and hopefully getting the big W's.
Well, Emma, it's been a pleasure. I genuinely wish you the very best for the rest of the season with Seattle, and of course when you return to England with Aston Villa, and unless it's when you're playing against Watford. But I will no doubt speak to you when you return to these shores, and good luck for the rest of the season.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Want more views from those in the game?
Read the blog at
thewfblog.wordpress.com.
So that was Emma Follis talking all things Seattle Sounders and her time out in America, wishing her the very best for the remainder of the season. And that brings us to the end of the show. Must apologise, I would like to quickly congratulate Sheffield FC and Coventry Ladies FC, who won the Northern and Southern Premier League divisions respectively in England. Congratulations to you both, fantastic seasons. And at some point, I would like to get a special done on the Premier League, because I know that it's an important division and part of the pyramid in England. I'd like to thank Ish for coming on the show and helping me out again. I'm sure she'll be back before we know it. I've got quick few details to reel off. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're on at WFPod. If you wish to listen to us online, you can do on audioboo.fm/WFPod or on iTunes. If you wish to email us, you can do. We're on the WFPod@gmail.com. And don't forget that we have a blog that is horribly out of date. I do apologise. I need to get some new blogs up there. You can catch that on the WFblog.wordpress.com. Final word from Ish. Ish, have you enjoyed being back? And are you going to join me again in the future, despite the fact that we disagree on almost everything?
I think that's the fact. That's the reason I will join you in the future, just for a good disagreement. Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Never a chore, KT, and I'd love to be back.
Thanks, mate. Well, until next time, guys, I will speak to you soon.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.